This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne. Good morning.
I'm Steve Inskeep. We've heard about wasted money in Iraq's reconstruction. Now, one question is who's responsible? That's a question we take up this morning as we continue a look at tens of billions of dollars in spending. Federal investigations say there is little to show for that money because of corruption and waste and fraud and mismanagement. NPR national security correspondent Jackie Northam reports on how things went so wrong.
Among the thousands of projects undertaken to reconstruct Iraq, one case offers a good microcosm of the challenges and missteps that have bedeviled the multi-billion-dollar rebuilding effort. In mid-2004, a California construction company, Parsons Incorporated, was given a project to build 151 primary health care centers across Iraq. The clinics were part of a broader, ambitious effort to give all Iraqis top-quality medical care. The $200 million contract was awarded by the Army Corps of Engineers. Parsons used Iraqi subcontractors, which usually hired local people to do the work. Ernie Robbins, a senior vice president with Parsons, says the projected number of clinics began to dwindle quickly.
About 10 were deleted up front for some of those site condition problems. Others because when the government said, go build this clinic in this location, either the local residents or the Ministry of Health said, we don't want you to build a clinic there.
Robbins says one U.S. government project manager would approve designs and timeframes. Then that manager would be rotated out of Iraq, another would come in and reverse many of those decisions. Robbins says that confused the process and caused delays on the construction sites. Robbins says then the violence from the insurgency and sectarian fighting started to get very serious.
As the situation deteriorated, it became less and less possible, even for site visits for an hour or two to oversee the subcontractors. We could not send expats out there. And so we used Iraqis, who we trained, to do that for us.
The Iraqi engineers would email photographs of the progress at the construction site back to Parsons officials sitting in the relative safety of Baghdad's Green Zone. Ginger Cruz, a senior advisor to the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction, or SIGR, says by rights, the Army Corps of Engineers should have been providing oversight of those projects. But like other government agencies, which contracted thousands of projects all over Iraq, Cruz says the Army Corps found it difficult to provide much oversight.
They have manpower shortages that they have to contend with. They have issues moving around the country. They have issues trying to perform quality control when you've got an inherently insecure situation.
As the violence in Iraq increased, so too did security costs. Construction of many of the health centers came to a near standstill. When Parsons' budget for the clinic started to run out, the contract was terminated for, quote, convenience. Trying to get a definitive answer on the number of clinics completed by Parsons is not easy. Of the original 151 promised, the construction company says it handed over 20 fully equipped, completed health care centers. The Army Corps of Engineers, which declined an on-air interview, disputes that number, saying it received only 6 completed clinics, and some of those needed additional work. The Corps says Parsons was given another month to finish the other 14 clinics, but that deadline was not met. Like so many other troubled projects in Iraq, it's difficult to know where to lay the blame. Stephen Schooner is the co-director of the Government Procurement Law Program at George Washington Law School.
What is very, very difficult at this point to go back and say, who's responsible for the error? I think that as a taxpayer, it's very easy to say, well, the work didn't get done, let's blame the contractor.
The contractors in Iraq were paid enormous sums of money. Federal investigators have uncovered many examples of corruption, waste, overbilling, and bad workmanship. But Schooner says often contractors were not given direction, and he says government officials awarding the contracts were not always honest about the security risks. Still, Schooner says not all the blame rests with those government officers handing out the contracts.
I think, frankly, that they were dealt an unfair hand as well. They were given insufficient resources to do the work. They were told to perform the work against an unrealistic deadline. And they were told that, frankly, money was no object. Get it done however you can get it done.
Frederick Barton, a post-conflict reconstruction expert with the Center for Strategic and International Studies, says there was never a clear U.S. strategy for reconstructing Iraq. There was very little planning, and the country wasn't stabilized before enormous projects got underway. Ann Barton says there were too many agencies involved instead of a single reconstruction czar.
When you look at the reconstruction and you find out that there really wasn't anybody singularly in charge, then you have to go to where the buck stops, which is the president and the vice president, because they were the ultimate decision makers.
There are efforts now to recoup the financial losses or make sure contractors live up to their obligations. The Gulf Region Division of the Army Corps of Engineers in Baghdad is responsible for managing reconstruction contracts. It's also tasked with chasing down underperforming contractors. Ginger Cruz with Seeger says once again there's a lack of resources to do the job.
If you barely have enough people to manage the reconstruction program, you don't have the extra people sitting around to be able to go through all the invoices and see where all of that money went and to go back and actually try and recover it.
The Democratic-controlled Congress has also been trying to get some accountability. Henry Waxman, the chairman of the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform, wanted to examine reports that Halliburton and its subsidiary, Kellogg Brown & Root, had been overbilling the government tens of millions of dollars. Waxman says it's been a long, slow process trying to get to the truth.
It's all very hard to get to facts that we wanted, and we weren't getting a lot of the cooperation from some of the people that should have been more forthcoming, especially when we were in the minority. And bit by bit, we got information that was conflicting because one agency of the government would say that they were doing a good job and not overcharging, but they were in fact ignoring the auditors who were saying otherwise.
Three government auditing agencies overseeing contract work in Iraq have been instrumental in trying to track down billions of dollars that are unaccounted for. In February, the agencies told Congress that some $10 billion was wasted or poorly documented, and that the problem could get worse because not enough was being done to correct it. Stuart Bowen, the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction, told the Senate Judiciary Committee in March that it's difficult to find evidence, such as documents or eyewitnesses, that are needed to prosecute cases of waste or mismanagement.
That's why I have pushed my office to pursue other alternative punitive measures, such as debarments and suspensions. I think, this is a fruitful path to pursue in order to hold accountable those who've taken advantage of the situation in situations where we can't come up with sufficient evidence to convict them of criminal wrongdoing.
Bowen's office is still working on dozens of investigations. To date, 19 individuals or companies have been suspended. 9 have been debarred for shoddy practices. So far, there have been 10 arrests and 3 imprisonments. $9 million has been recovered so far, just a fraction of the amount squandered or lost during the reconstruction of Iraq. Jackie Northam, NPR News, Washington.
One reconstruction project in Iraq has focused on building a new maximum security prison near the city of Nasiriyah. According to the Army Corps of Engineers, phase one of construction will be completed by next October, nearly 3 years after construction began. This first phase includes 2 maximum security buildings, which can house 400 inmates each and generate their own power. That's an especially important feature since no one in the province can actually count on getting electricity.